Welcome to the Embodiment Conference 2020, also on behalf of the whole team behind the scenes. Thank you for your attention to another amazing presentation about intimacy and relationship. My name is Ilan Stefani and it's my pleasure to be sponsoring this channel, as I deeply believe that aliveness, embodiment, intimacy, relationship are key to individual and global change. My ongoing somatic research is focused on more and more aliveness for each and every one of us. I tune into the fields of collective trauma, of intimacy, of love and rage, shadow work, and higher level of energy. If you are curious about my work, you might want to catch my presentation on this channel as well as on the main stage. And you can also head over to my website, ilanstefani.com. My methods have been described as an embodiment training for warriors. However, you are so welcome to find out yourself. I teach online and in person. I teach in German as well as in English. Thank you for your attention and please enjoy the following presentation.
Hello, everybody. Looks like we've got about 40 people out there at the moment. Welcome to this session. Excited to be here with you. I'm beaming to you from outside of Boulder, Colorado, in the mountains of the America West. And I'm very happy to be here with you. I'm fresh back from Denmark, in fact, just got back from leading our leadership training that ended this last week. So feeling super lit up and excited about this practice and the impact that it's been having on people. And excited to spend this time with you to share with you the practice itself and how it can be applied to your lives, to your relationships, to the world right away with measurable direct impact in the moment and beyond. My name is Ryle again. I'm a co-founder and senior course leader at ART International, Authentic Relating Training International. And we offer courses in person in about 40, 45 locations around the world on four continents. Of course, this year took an interesting turn. So we actually used the events of this year as an opportunity to launch all of our online coursework. So you can now get the full dose of authentic relating training online, which has been a super exciting new frontier for us to complement our live courses. And of course, as things hopefully return to some sense of normalcy, we will be offering our in-person courses once again. Our courses are for every single human being, no matter what you do, where you're from, your values, your political orientation, or any other criteria. If you are a human, you are an audience for authentic relating. It really is for us the universal language of human connection. And I've been blessed to travel around the world these last 3.5 years, sharing this work with people far and wide from a variety of different cultural and national backgrounds. And it's been an extraordinary experience of seeing the impact of this practice and how it can support and foster human connection everywhere with everybody. I see people are already posting their locations. I'd love for everybody just to take a moment and post where you are in the moment. I see Denmark, LA, Netherlands, Turkey, New York, Oregon. Awesome. And there we go. All right. International crowd, while you're from all over the place. Sweet. I love it. I've been to many of these places teaching. So super cool. Welcome, 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 everyone. All right. I'm going to share my screen so you all can follow along. And the first question I want to answer for everybody is, what is authentic relating? You might have heard it. You can probably deduce a little bit from the name itself. But I'm going to break it down for you a little bit more. So authentic, what is authentic? Authentic is being real, being revealed, allowing yourself to be vulnerable, to be seen, and to express yourself. You might, if this language and these words work for you, you might also consider the authentic part of authentic relating to be the more masculine end of the spectrum. It is more yang, using the voice, expressing ourselves, the attention is on us and our authentic experience. in how we show up and how we express ourselves. And then to balance that and to create a kind of symbiosis between these two elements is the relating. So relating is inviting others to be revealed and expressed. And you could also consider that the relating aspect maps onto the feminine, to yin energy, to be in a space of receiving and welcoming and using the eyes and ears. I love this way of mapping onto our own anatomy, where authentic is using your voice to express yourself out into the world, asking others to receive and listen to you, while the relating aspect maps on to using your eyes and ears, coming into stillness inside of yourself so that you can tune your awareness outside of yourself and create a space for other people to be heard, to be seen, to be welcomed and appreciated. I noticed that in my teaching, I really place probably more emphasis, in fact, on the relating part of authentic relating. I think that there is already a very well-established value in the transformational and conscious arts for authentic expression, which is beautiful. I celebrate it. But what really I think creates a beautiful experience in this practice of authentic relating is how much explicit emphasis it puts on relating with others, recognizing that there are other people with whom I'm in relationship, and that there's a time and place for me to quiet my own authentic expression so that I can create room and space and a welcoming for other people to express their own authentic expression. And then authentic relating is a kind of dance between these two poles. There's a way of moving and flying and flowing in between the pole that I am and the pole that you are. Authentic relating is revealing the hidden. I would say that at its essence, when people ask me, what is this practice? The easiest way that I can answer that is that it is making the implicit explicit. It is becoming conscious to the unconscious, revealing the hidden, naming the unnamed, seeing the unseen, and basically recognizing how authentic relating is a kind of experience of illumination. I consider authentic relating itself to be an entity of illumination that will bring the light into the shadows, into the recesses, into the hidden parts. And in that illuminated experience, there is the opportunity for integration and for wholeness. There is a central thread running through this practice of authentic relating that continues to invite us to becoming ever more whole in ourselves, in each other, in our relationships, and indeed in the world itself. I certainly can track my own experience and my trajectory through this practice. I used to be extremely hidden. This was my place of safety. I used hiding as a way to feel safe and would hide any part of myself that I didn't have to show. Even physically in rooms, I would try to hide and hug the walls and stay in the shadows. And authentic relating has really guided me and supported me and invited me to become ever more revealed, to come out of hiding and to let myself be seen and known. And I can tell you, if you can relate to this, that I was always terrified of revealing my true experience, especially the parts of myself that were more hidden and guarded, out of fear that if I were to reveal those things, people would absolutely judge me and move away from me and abandon me. And it's just not worth the risk. So I learned to stay hidden, to stay accepted and to stay liked. But as it turns out, the more I have revealed myself, the closer people come, the deeper my connections. It turns out that the parts of myself that I am most ashamed of, the parts of myself that I keep most guarded and hidden, are in fact the parts of myself that have me feel as united and connected with an experience of a shared human condition. There's this beautiful quote by the artist and philosopher Tony Berlant, where he says, the more introspective a work of art is, the more universal it becomes. And how I map that onto authentic relating is our willingness to be revealed, in fact, actually brings us into connection and guides us into more intimacy with other human beings. It turns out the parts of ourselves that we all feel individually most ashamed of are the things that bring us into more of an experience of universal human connection. Nice. Well, it's a perfect theme of authentic relating that focuses on embodiment here in the context of the Embodiment Conference. I spend a lot of my time in workshops and in my role as a teacher focusing on the role that the body plays and how authentic relating is such a beautiful practice of reintegrating and re-embodying us with the wisdom and guidance that lives in the body. I certainly was completely disassociated from my body, couldn't feel anything, couldn't tell what I was feeling until I really dedicated myself to this practice. And I want to share with you this really beautiful insight that Dr. Gábor Máté has spent a lot of time elucidating. I highly recommend you check him out. He's a Hungarian-Canadian doctor and a trauma expert. And Dr. Máté says that as children, we have two fundamental and primary needs in order to be raised in a healthy environment. The first need is for authentic expression, and the second need is for secure attachment. And if a child is raised with a support and a context of upbringing that supports and invites and creates a space for both of those to be, that is the trajectory for greatest health and wholeness. However, if a child ever perceives that their connections, their attachments are being threatened, they will always sacrifice and give up authentic expression in order to ensure the security of their attachments. That's why so many of us have grown up suppressing our authentic expression out of fear that it may jeopardize or undermine our attachments, relationships, and connections. And Dr. Máté also says how the body itself is such a repository and resource for wisdom and guidance, that that sense that you have in your gut, an instinct, is actually the intelligence of the body trying to inform you and respond to the environment and stimuli. And when we become suppressed and disassociated, we cut ourselves off from these timeless instincts that are there to keep us safe and to guide us and to protect us, to inform us and keep us oriented. I have not found anything as effective in the world as authentic relating in reconnecting me to that insight, that guidance, that sense of instinct and wisdom that lives in my body. What's so beautiful about authentic relating is that instead of living in a paradigm in which we are forced to choose between secure attachment and authentic expression, authentic relating in fact creates a paradigm in which the two are synergistic. The more authentically expressed you are, the more are your attachments secure, the deeper your connections can go. And the deeper your connections and the more secure are your attachments, the more you can be authentically expressed. I find it to be such a beautiful evolution of the paradigm that restores a sense of balance in our bodies and in connection. So how do we do all that? The primary tool of authentic relating that allows us to be in our bodies and to reconnect with the intelligence, wisdom, and guidance that lives in our bodies is to go slow. This is the very first thing that I ever teach anybody. It doesn't matter who the audience is, whether it's inmates or executives or students or anybody from anywhere. The first thing I ever have us do is to slow down. And in fact, I would love for everybody right now to take a moment and notice your own pace, the pace of your thoughts, the pace of your body, the pace that you're moving through life. Is there a way that even now, in this moment, you can take a breath and slow down? And in the slowing down, can you notice more? Can you notice more of what's happening in your body? Can you notice more of what's happening in your environment? This is the central, and I would say the most important skill to access the extraordinary landscape that is authentic relating, going slow. And what going slow allows us to experience as an evolution from reacting to responding. So certainly when there are elements in the environment that trigger us or that put us into a state of threat perception, so much of our body and even our brains are designed to react instinctively, to react reflexively, to get us out of danger and to make sure that we avoid whatever we are perceiving as a threat. But the trade-off is that in our reflexive reaction, we are responding to the environment, to the world in low resolution. We haven't had the time to really notice and tune into what is happening inside of ourselves and outside of ourselves. So by slowing down, we're able to bring more of our perception, of our senses, and even our brain function to increase the resolution of our perception that moves us from reacting reflexively to responding intelligently. Then you can see, oh, it's just a shadow on the wall. It's not actually a threat. The reactive components of our physiology are extremely sensitive. And so they'll be triggered by almost anything that they perceive as a threat. And so often of the time, especially in the context of relationships, what you initially perceive as a threat is not in fact a threat. And by slowing down, you're able to access more of your perceptive sense, to notice more of what's happening in your body, to take some breaths, and to be able to respond intelligently. We use the breath always at every one of our courses as a way to slow everybody down and to create an explicit and central practice that allows us to feel more of what is here. We slow down to feel more. And the more we can feel, the deeper our connections. And the deeper our connections, the more intimacy we can experience, the more nourishment we can have from our relationships. So if you remember nothing else from this presentation, I hope you'll remember to slow down. One of the most effective requests that you can make in relationship or conversation is, can we slow down? Anytime you feel like things are speeding up or you're starting to become disembodied or disassociated, step in and say, can we slow down? And then take some breaths. It's incredible what can happen, especially in a context of tension or conflict. How much more can open, how much more can soften, how much more of the connection is available by simply slowing down. All right, so moving on. Here and now. Authentic relating is about the here and now. What is happening right here? What is happening right now? And to help illustrate this, I want to share with you what we call the three levels of conversation. The highest level is the informational. So we are simply discussing or trading data points about the world. These are facts, objectivity. Something like 80% of all of language is informational. It's very functional. It's very useful. It helps us get oriented. It helps relay information from one person to another or one group to another. But it's also devoid of any sense of intimacy or opportunity for connection. And so if we move one level down, we get to the second level of conversation, that is the personal. And now we're talking about our feelings and how we feel about what we have shared at the informational level. So at the informational level, I could say, it's raining outside today. And at the personal level, I could say, and I'm sad about that. I really wish it was sunny. And so now we're starting to get more of a sense of people. There's more opportunity for intimacy, for connection, for seeing and being seen. And this is usually where most people actually sort of bottom out in the intimacy that's available in their conversations and interactions. And yet authentic relating offers us a third level of conversation and that is the relational level. And the relational level of conversation is defined by the here and the now. And the here and now is different than any of the other levels. So at the informational, I could say, my boss yelled at me this morning. Fact, right? I'm not letting you know anything. I'm just letting you know the fact. So you have no idea how I feel about that. And then at the personal level, I'll say, and I was really angry and upset when he yelled at me, because that happened this morning. It's away from here and now. And then whoever I'm talking to may ask me, and how is it to share that with me right now? And I might say, oh, it feels so relieving just to tell somebody. I notice how relieving it feels just to share it and get it off my chest. And that's happening in the here and now. So if you want to experience the most aliveness, the sense of spark in between you and another in the conversational space, if you want to have access to the deepest sense of intimacy, of vulnerability, of connection, then commit to the here and now, commit to the relational level. What's happening here? What's happening now? So at any time in any conversation, you can share, this is what I'm feeling right now. This is what I'm noticing about my own experience right now. This is what it's like for me to share this with you right now. Or you can ask the person that you're with, what is it like for you to share that with me? What's it like for you to hear what I just shared? What are you feeling right now? What's happening right now? What are we feeling right now? A little side tip, if you're ever in a social sort of more like, kind of party environment, and you're in a conversation that is lifeless, and we all know what a lifeless conversation feels like. It's just nothing. There's just nothing happening. We're not going anywhere. You can ask at any moment in that conversation, how is this conversation going for you? And this is such a sweet way to bring the attention to the here and now. I've actually done this. I found myself in some boring, lifeless conversation. I've asked that, and exactly in that moment, the spark came back. Something happened, and they'll say, oh yeah, this is a completely boring conversation. And I love that you just asked me that. And now suddenly we're in the here and now. So the here and now is where the most amount of juice is, and the greatest opportunity for a sense of connection, deep connection, intimacy, vulnerability. And all of that wonderful stuff. And it's always right there under the surface. It's always possible to bring the attention to the here and now. Next piece, the hologram. So the hologram, by the way, I think I'm going to pause and just mention, this is an interesting experience for me, because pretty much always, 99.9% of the time, when I'm teaching or presenting, it's always an interactive experience. I'm always inviting people to share and to go into breakouts and to do exercises. So this is a unique experience for me to be just going on and presenting. It's sort of like I crave and I need the connection on the other side, even if it's an audience of hundreds. And so I'm just noticing that in the absence of that, it's a little bit surreal. In any event, the hologram. So the hologram, if you don't know, is a three-dimensional representation of a two-dimensional image. And a feature of the hologram is that when you shatter it, every fragment of the hologram contains the entire image. And the reason why we use that as a metaphor is because it guides us to look at how we show up in a single moment as an insight into how we show up in every moment. How you show up in this moment is how you show up in every moment. Because we are run by patterns that have been conditioned into us from a very early age. And then we move around the world as expressions of underlying patterns. And most often those patterns live in the shadow. You don't even know that a pattern is expressing itself or influencing your behavior, your choices, your thoughts, the ways that you react, the ways that you get triggered. And so the hologram is a beautiful opportunity to notice how you're feeling in a single moment, to slow down, to breathe, to look deeply in yourself in that moment and see if you can make contact with the underlying pattern that is exerting itself on you in the moment. So I might be in an argument with somebody and I notice I've got some heat coming up and I've got these thoughts. In that moment, if I'm able to slow down, I can look deeply within myself and I can see, oh man, this is how I react all the time. And that reaction is based on some belief, some story. I'm not worthy. I don't matter. Or whatever flavor of wounding or conditioning might live at your core and contribute to the patterns that then end up expressing themselves through you. So, you know, this level three leadership course that I just came back from Denmark to lead, we spent so much time focusing on the hologram and really bringing such awareness and consciousness to every single moment to be able to see the underlying pattern. Now, the beautiful thing, the gift of the hologram is that it works in both directions. So your ability, your capacity, your willingness, your consciousness, and in fact, I would say your skill to transform yourself in a single moment has the effect of transforming the underlying pattern in every moment. So if you are able and willing to make a different choice in the context of conversation, interaction, or relationship, you're helping influence and evolve and shift the underlying pattern that will then provide easier access to that choice in other similar circumstances. So remember the hologram. You can always ask yourself and each other, where else does this show up in my life? And the answer is usually everywhere. Cool. And lastly, discomfort. We put a lot of emphasis on our capacity and our willingness to embrace and be with and in discomfort. Often discomfort is a sign or indication that we are inside some story or faulty or distorted perception. And so by our willingness to rest in the discomfort, to stay in the discomfort and look around, to explore it, to get into relationship with it, to get curious about it, in fact, has the ultimate effect of expanding our comfort zone to include that which originally produced an experience of discomfort. This is such an incredible feature of being human, the ability to expand your comfort zone by being willing to be on your edges, to move toward your discomfort, to explore it, and ultimately to integrate it into an experience of greater wholeness, will have the effect of increasing your comfort zone. And when you are within your comfort zone, you are balanced and grounded and centered. We call that a state of equanimity. Equanimity is the ability to stay conscious and aware and in connection to yourself and others, no matter what is arising or happening. You can kind of take that to the extreme visual of a sort of guru or Buddha sitting in meditation, and there's bombs going off and cannons being fired and fires raging in the world. And that Buddha or guru is able to remain open and aware and conscious and connected and non-reactive. This is such a powerful skill that authentic relating has really shown me and taught me and many others to step into and to practice. And I would say certainly as we look around the world right now and we see so much instability and unpredictability and chaos, I believe that it is the people and the leaders that are most able to remain equanimous that will lead us to the future and out of this and into the next great paradigm of humanity. So equanimity comes as a natural outgrowth and product of your willingness to embrace being uncomfortable. And in fact, I don't actually really like the word discomfort because it implies that there's something wrong with the experience that you're in. So rather than calling it discomfort, see if you can rest in the experience and really explore what it actually is. I get that it's not comfortable, but what is it? How does it feel? What does it look like? What does it sound like, taste like, smell like? And really explore it. And you'll be rewarded with an expansion of your comfort zone, your ability to stay in connection with yourself and others, no matter what might be arising. All right, I gotta remember myself to slow down and take a breath. I'm watching the clock. Make sure that we get it all done in time. Okay, so that brings us to the five practices of authentic relating. So we have developed here at ART the five practices. These come from our having lived this work in our lives. This is not some theoretical imposition of what we think constitutes the practice. It comes directly out of living it, and of many people living it over a long period of time. It's almost as if by living it, the practice itself informed us how it most effectively wanted to be conveyed and disseminated into the world. And the five practices are a distillation of the essence and spirit of authentic relating. I feel I'm like so committed to living my life in alignment with these five practices that I want to go as far as to say that if you are willing and able to live your life in alignment with these five practices, you cannot but help to experience profound transformation in the quality of your life and your relationships. I can almost promise you that you would experience profound transformation if you live in alignment with these five practices. We teach these five practices to everybody all the time. They are fully universal. They apply to everybody, no matter the social context, and they work everywhere, in the workplace, at home, commuting in between, anywhere you might find yourself in company of others. So the first of the five practices is, in fact, the most important. It is the gateway to everything. You cannot move past this first practice into the others until you have really spent some time here at step number one, and that is welcome everything. Welcome everything. So what does welcome everything mean? Welcome everything means to become aware of, to wake up to open the senses so that you can notice and become conscious to everything that is arising within yourself, in others, and in the world. Welcome does not mean that you agree with or approve of or condone. It simply means becoming aware of. It is the practice by which we can expand our field of awareness to include more and more and more. With as many years as I have dedicated to this practice, I am still discovering aspects and elements of myself to this very day because of this single practice. Looking within and seeing, what am I not welcoming? And how is my not welcoming an aspect of my own experience causing suffering? Just as a recent example, I've noticed just in the last few weeks how avoidant I am. This pattern and instinct for avoidance was riding under the surface all this time until finally some events really helped me get in touch with it. And I could see for how long and how much of my life I was not welcoming my own instinct and pattern for avoidance. And now that I have seen it and welcomed it, I've cultivated an even deeper and more intimate relationship with the part of myself that avoids, which is the part of myself that doesn't want to turn toward conflict or intensity and tries to remain comfortable and stay safe. I love this quote by Ram Dass, "The world is perfect just as it is, including my desire to change it." I love that that really speaks to the essence of the welcome everything practice. What are you not welcoming? What are you avoiding? What are you suppressing? What are you pretending doesn't exist? I can almost guarantee that everybody has a part of themselves that they are avoiding, suppressing, or pretending doesn't exist. And even when you think you've got it, even when you think, oh, that's it, I've got every last piece of myself, there's always more, always, always more. This is a lifetime practice. It never ends. There's always something to welcome and accept ever further. You can look out into the world as well. What am I not welcoming in the world? What am I pushing away? What am I avoiding? What am I not acknowledging? Especially what makes me uncomfortable? Look into the shadow. Look into the darkness and see what is there that you may be avoiding or suppressing, and see if you can turn toward it and welcome it. Turning towards something and welcoming it almost always alleviates suffering and pain, and it puts you on the path towards wholeness, towards integration, towards self-actualization. Just as a very quick I wish we had a lot more time, but as a little taste, I'd love for everybody right now to take a moment and take some breaths, slow down, bring your awareness inside of yourself. Bring your awareness to your breath. The breath is a beautiful place to become conscious to the unconscious. How often are we breathing without consciousness, without mindfulness? And by simply bringing our awareness to the breath, becoming conscious to the unconscious, welcoming all the sensations, all the facets of the experience of breathing, how can we use that to welcome even more? What are you not welcoming in yourself right now, whether it's physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual? I hope you take this practice and apply it in every moment. The more we welcome, the more we heal. Closer we can become to a sense of integration and wholeness. The second of the five practices is assume nothing. So while it is probably literally impossible to go around the world assuming nothing all the time, you probably walk off a cliff or get hit by a bus or something bad. This practice invites us to first notice the assumptions that we are making about ourselves, about each other, and about the world. We are all always making assumptions. We are, as humans, assumption-making machines. And so if you take a moment and notice the assumptions you're making assumptions about me right now, whether they're conscious or unconscious. Often the assumptions that we make about people or things or circumstances are unconscious. They live in the unconscious. They just happen automatically. So much of our bodies, our minds, are designed to make assumptions so that we can stay oriented to the world. However, many of those assumptions are based on faulty or distorted information. And so the assumptions themselves are faulty or distorted. Often we will conflate what is an assumption with reality itself and then orient to reality as if that assumption were true. So the example I often give is if I'm teaching and we're sitting in a circle and I see somebody across the circle, sort of kicked back and they're leaning back and they're sort of looking around or looking at their device or otherwise looking distracted, I might make the assumption that they're checked out and they're not engaged. And if I don't say anything and then I just go on as if that assumption were true, now I'm going to relate with them as if that assumption were true. I might have judgments. I might get angry or upset or resentful. And yet if I actually slow down, as always, and take a moment, notice I'm making an assumption about this person based on what I'm perceiving. And then the second step is that I'm willing to check that assumption out with the other person. Hey, I noticed you seem distracted. You're looking around, looking at your device. And I had the assumption that you weren't paying attention or weren't engaged. Is that true? And then they say, oh, no, I'm just trying to get comfortable. And now suddenly in that moment, we come into real connection. Now I get to relate this to this person in reality instead of through the filter and dirty lens that my assumptions might put over my eyes. So notice where you are making assumptions about yourself, about others, about the world, and then check those assumptions out with every gesture or act of your checking out an assumption. That act brings you ever closer into an intimate relationship with reality itself. So if you're committed to being in orientation, if you're committed to being oriented to reality itself, to having an intimate relationship with reality, assume nothing is a beautiful practice for that. Reveal your experience is our third of the five practices. Reveal your experience. I will go out on a limb and say that almost every single human being deep down longs to be seen, to be heard, to be welcomed, loved, appreciated, regarded, respected for who they are. Without having to put on airs, without having to construct some artificial representation or version of themselves. They simply want to be who they are and be loved and accepted for who they are. And yet, in our longing to be seen, how much are we actually revealing ourselves? How can you expect to be seen if you are not showing yourself? Okay, so you cannot put it on other people to see you and accept you for who you are if you are not willing to reveal your experience first. Revealing your experience starts with revealing your experience to your own self. What's actually happening for me? What is my own experience? Reveal it to yourself and then reveal it to another. Be willing to be vulnerable. Be willing to reveal those parts of yourself that you might otherwise guard or protect or feel shame around or keep in the shadows. We have a saying at ART that revealing is healing. Revealing is healing. And again, coming out of this extraordinary deep dive in community at this leadership course in Denmark, that was very much explicitly out in the space, people revealing their authentic experience and allowing us to be really an intimate connection with people as they are revealing. So revealing obviously takes some sense of courage and be willing to be courageous in your revealing in service to intimate and richer, deeper, more enlivening connections and relationships. Revealing your experience does not mean blurting everything out all the time, okay? Because you actually do have boundaries. There are parts of you that you are private about or for whatever reason feel guarded about, but you can reveal exactly that. Hey, I notice I'm not actually ready to share this with you. I notice that there's a part of my experience that feels private right now, right? That is revealing your experience. You're revealing your actual authentic experience. All right, I've got my eye on the clock, trying to time this so that we get through everything on time. The fourth of our five practices is own your experience. Own your experience. What does that mean? It means taking rigorous responsibility for the experience that you're having. Wherever it is that you are attributing an aspect of your experience to an outside person or outside circumstances, you are disempowering yourself. You're giving that person, those people, or that circumstance the power to shape your experience. And so if you want to have the experience that you want to have, you might never get it because you've given the power away. Own your experience is taking the power back and looking within to find the source of your experience, no matter how much it might seem that somebody else is to blame or some other circumstance is the source of your experience. Almost always, if you are willing to look within, you will find the source of your experience within yourself and often in your unconscious self, which is another opportunity to become conscious to the unconscious. So if you want to have the experience that you envision having or would like to move toward, take full responsibility and move toward it. It also means finding your part in any breakdown or any experience of conflict. So again, in practically every single interaction or experience of conflict, you have a part to play. I would say 99.9% of the time, you have a part to play. Stop blaming. Stop pointing the finger outward. Point the finger inward. Look inside. Find your part, and then be willing to reveal your part in service of healing the divide and bringing yourself back into clear, conscious connection and relationship. By the way, at our workshops, we have lots of exercises that dive deeply into the spirit of all of these. So I'm just skimming the surface here. The fifth of our five practices is honor self and other. And I would say the prior four all lead to the ability to truly and fully honor yourself and honor others. So let's break this down a little bit. Honor self. Honor self means knowing my own needs, my wants, my preferences, my hopes, dreams, visions, boundaries, biases, knowing myself, knowing all these things so that I can honor myself, especially knowing what my values are. If you live your life in misalignment with your core values, you will suffer. And so the experience of immersing yourself in authentic relating is one in which you can use the relational space to know yourself ever more deeply and to know what your core values are. We'll often say that when you're really, truly with somebody and listening deeply to them, you can see them even more deeply than they can see themselves. And so your reflection of someone when you're coming from that space allows them to access more of who they are at their core. Once you are in touch with your core values, then you can live your life in alignment with those core values. You can shape your needs, wants, and boundaries as an expression and extension of your core values. And then you can move about through life and relationship without dishonoring yourself, without overstepping your boundaries, without undermining your values, all of which creates suffering. I'll just say, you know, what is my intention? What is my core? What is my own core value in being an authentic relating teacher? It's because it has so profoundly alleviated suffering in my life, unnecessary suffering, and where I lived out of alignment with my values, needs, and wants. And I want to share that with other people to do my part in alleviating the suffering in the world. Honor others is exactly the mirror image of that, but for other people. Learn and get curious about the values, needs, wants, and boundaries of other people. Slow down, listen, get curious, set aside your own perceptions, biases, and assumptions, and really be with people. We have this lovely saying called the, or sort of a thing to live by. It's called the platinum rule. So you might know the golden rule. The golden rule is treat others as you would like to be treated, except there's a real problem with that because you don't know how other people like to be treated based on how you like to be treated. And so the platinum rule is treat others as they would like to be treated, which invites you to listen, to get curious, and to find out the values, needs, and wants of other people so that you can honor them. And then I would go so far as to say that conscious relationship, a relationship that is built upon mutual honoring and respect, is the place in which my honoring of myself and your honoring of yourself overlap. When we are in full honoring of ourselves, and the place of overlap that exists in that honoring is where we can build conscious relationship. And I would also say that a beautiful aspiration in the context of conscious relationship is to seek to expand that zone of overlap so that we can stay in honoring and create more of a place of connection, of intimacy, of co-exploration of the world, of life, of each other and ourselves. So if you're experiencing in any way suffering or pain in the context of relationship, you or another are not honoring yourselves. You're not honoring your values, needs, and wants, and allowing your boundaries to be overstepped. Many of us have lived in relationships in which we were not honoring those things, or the people that we are with were not honoring either. And it may so be that once you get really clear about your own values, needs, and wants, you might see that there is actually no overlap between yourself and another. There is no way for you to honor yourself and stay in relationship with someone at the same time. Your areas of honoring are mutually exclusive. And so the most honoring thing to do in that case is to end the relationship, or at least to shift the context of relationship, so that you can come back into honoring. If you're not honoring yourself, you will very likely suffer in the context of relationship. All right, I've got about 6 minutes to share with you a little bit more. This is all, yeah, this is all rich, rich stuff. So I wish we had more time. This is our what, how, why iceberg. And so I'm gonna spend just a couple minutes unpacking this a little bit. So we like to think that every single human basically is shaped like this iceberg. So at the very surface is the what. That's what people say. That's what they are conscious of saying. It's what comes out of their mouth, right? And that's above the waterline here that separates the what and the how. We're most conscious of the what we are saying, how we're expressing. So underneath that, just below the waterline, is the how. The how is how we are when we are saying what we're saying. So that's body language, facial expression, all the nonverbal cues that convey how somebody is experiencing life in the world or themselves in that moment. And what's interesting about the how is that it's most often unconscious. We are not aware of our nonverbal means of communication. And in fact, there's such a richness here that lives in the how level in how we communicate. So I encourage you to really zoom out, to open your perceptive field and notice how people are being as they are expressing their what. And you will get enormous amounts of information here at the how level. Because it's unconscious, it's also honest. So while we can distort, we can lie, we can be dishonest about what we say, the how of how we say is almost always honest because it's unconscious. So you can learn much more about a person's authentic experience by noticing their how, and especially how the how might be dissonant with their what. And then here at the bottom, at the core of a person is their why. Why? Why are they who they are? Why are they saying what they're saying? Why are they making the choices that they're making? At the why level is where someone's core values live. If you want to know someone deeply and intimately, you must get to the why. We have a saying at ART, which is getting to the why, getting to the why. It's also the most hidden, right? So that's where the relating part of authentic relating is so powerful, in that we can reflect the why back to each other. And that allows each person to access their own why. So the why often, the why I would say changes the least. It's really the core part of somebody throughout their lives. And I would say if you don't understand why somebody is showing up the way that they are, why are they saying what they're saying? Why do they have the opinions that they have? And you're confused or frustrated or any of those things, is because you haven't gotten to the why. So it's a time to slow down and really access the core why to understand a person. Once you get to the why, everything about a person makes perfect sense. It's that experience of saying to yourself, oh, of course they're saying what they're saying. Of course they're reacting how they're reacting. Of course they have this opinion or perspective, because it's sourced in and stems from their core why. Take the time to slow down and get to the why in yourself and others to experience the most intimacy, the most connection, the most healing. And lastly, I want to share with you what we call the Dignity Humility Map. This is an incredible tool and map to use in life and in your relationships. Dignity on the left side, I'm going to race through this so we can end on time. Dignity is you having a voice. It's the authentic part. It's the honor self part. It's you speaking your truth into the world. And yet if you go too far past dignity, you get in a posture. That's where you're closed to connection and you're sort of puffing yourself up bigger. It's kind of a fuck you type of energy. And then at the other end of the spectrum, if you go to humility, that's listening, that's being quiet inside, creating space for others. That's the relating part of authentic relating, honor other part. If you go past humility, you get into collapse. That's where I'm a piece of shit, I'm worthless, I can't do anything right. You go into shame. Blame goes outward, shame goes inward. These are ways to recognize that you are in shame or blame. Much, much, much more I could say about this if I had the time. But I just want to close here with next steps. So at ART, we offer every 2 weeks what we call ART community calls. These are run by our extensive network of course leaders and mentors around the world. They're in two different time zones every Friday and Sunday. And it's a beautiful opportunity to come get a taste of authentic relating in real time. Instead of hearing me just go on and on about talking about it, come and actually experience it, connect with people, get a taste. They're always free. They're always open to the public. So come check that out here at this link. And then lastly, if you'd like to come actually take a course with us, our level one course is offered online and selectively in person around the world. And we've designed this course for absolutely everybody. If you are human, you are our audience. It's the course to bring your parents, neighbors, friends, colleagues, bosses, family members, and everybody else. So please come check us out. Thank you so much. Ended right on time. Thanks for being here. Much love.
Thank you so much, Ryle. That was fantastic. And that was Ryle Castano talking about the authentic relating. And you can find out more about what ART is and what's on offer there with authenticrelating.co. That is. Up next in the Intimacy and Relationships channel, we have, is masturbation a part of your self-care? with Sue Sutherland, and that's in a just over an hour. And these sessions are set at the beginning are free for the next 48 hours. I would like to be digesting these at my leisure, and so that's part of the reason I'm volunteering here to get access to these incredible recordings. The obvious next step is to purchase the library, and so you could digest these at your leisure as well. It's twice as expensive at the end of the conference, so it's a good time, and we've got another day remaining of that offer. If you're someone who works professionally in trauma, you can get a discount. Just message us, and we'll be able to speak with you about that. So, Ryle, we've got 3.5 minutes and a few questions in the chat, in the Q&A. Okay. I don't know if you've had a chance to see them yourself, but I'll offer those to you. So for those of us who have trouble identifying our values, needs and wants, what work do you recommend? I've recently realized this, and it makes it very difficult to practice these 5 practices.
Yes. Beautiful. That is I would say it's not an easy answer, because it's a lifelong exploration. You know, there's so many layers caked down in our subconscious, not only in our own lifetime, but intergenerationally, and the way that we carry the wounds and traumas of culture itself. And so authentic relating is a practice of ever so gradually and slowly starting to identify and then peel those layers back. And the beauty of it is that it occurs in the relational space. We actually need each other as mirrors to be able to reflect the unconscious parts of ourselves to each other. And that's why it's such a beautiful practice. So where you might think of solo meditation, you know, sitting on a cushion, as an opportunity to start to notice and become conscious to your unconscious self, authentic relating is relational meditation. It's exactly the same principle, but it occurs in the relational space. So I would say it's really a process of slowing down, opening yourself up and becoming intimate in your relationships, and really pay attention and tuning into the mirror reflection in others will start to have you being able to notice some of these things. It's also staying really present to when a boundary might be crossed, that feeling. Take your time to really look into and explore that feeling. And once you spend that time, you will locate the underlying value that produced the visceral experience.
Thanks, Ra. So we've got 1.5 minutes.
Oh my God.
If one person in the relationship is more invested or open in doing the work of authentic relating versus blaming or shaming the other, how to move forward?
Yeah, so this is exactly what I was saying about really slowing down and getting to the why of the other person. If somebody is showing up in a way that confuses you, or you don't understand, or frustrated by, slow down, take some breaths, come into a relationship, step into your humility, and get curious so that you can get to the underlying values that this person is holding. Once you get to the why, everything about them will make sense. That'll give you the basis to start to explore some of these blocks that might be in the relational space.
And so we've got last 40 seconds. I'm just wondering whether you could give us a pointer around how to get to the why, a top tip around it.
Yeah. I mean, really, in a nutshell, I would say that the first and last thing I would always say is really, truly commit yourself to slowing down, especially in the relational space. Slow down enough to take a breath in between everything that you exchange. You will access so much more in yourself and in others in a slow pace. Ask always, can we slow down? Once you get into that slower pace, you'll notice so much more that's there, that's available, and you'll experience such a richness and depth that's available in the connective space. So that's really the best thing I can say in the 10 seconds that I have to share something.
That's perfect. And in terms of practicing slowing down, you've managed to give us so many nuggets in such a short space of time. It's incredible. Thank you, Ryle.